In today's Totally Football Show, four more for Man United as Mourinho lets his horses run free and Swansea have a mare. Chelsea topple Tottenham and Jesse beats the Jessies in Stoke Arsenal. We ask Spurs choosing Wembley for home games. Is that a bit like Arsenal playing theirs in the Potteries? There's all the Premier League news, including Huddersfield and Southampton's home game goal shortage, ending with typically three coming along at once. And there's big news from the Championship and beyond as well. Ronan Keating's nephew's own goal mystery, plus Ligue 1, a dazzling display from Neymar, but somebody else doing something even better. It's all in this Totally Football Show. So it begins. Kelly Cates, I'm so delighted to see you back.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Are you?
I'm detecting a bit of an edge, though, James.
No, it's been an interesting build-up to today's pod, but I'm glad to be back among friends. Friends like mon ami Philippe Auclair.
Bonjour, Jimbo.
And Ian McIntosh as well.
Good morning.
All right. Ian, good to see you. You've been on your travels this week.
I have a little, yeah. Mm. The great pleasure of being in Huddersfield yesterday.
Okay.
Ooh.
Philippe, you're going to be talking to us about overseas football later on.
Maybe I will.
Okay.
Yes.
Speaking of overseas football, among the many stories I enjoyed this weekend was the Walsall fan who made the trip to Portsmouth.
Do we believe him?
Oh, do you think it wasn't a true story?
The only thing I think is if you book a hotel, if you book a hotel or you book accommodation to go to a game, you don't go on Twitter and say, great, I've booked a place to stay. That's a weird thing to tweet.
Right. This is the guy who looked for a hotel 11 miles from Portsmouth, because that's within easily doable range, only it was on the Isle of Wight.
Yes. Just, I thought it felt a bit like the setup to a punchline.
Right.
I don't know if I believe. Am I just
cynical?
Punchline
that's not coming on this. But you might be right, Kelly. You're right to cast doubt on that story and this one. Speaking of overseas footballers, the extraordinary Breitbart news report
which
they took Lukas Podolski on a jet ski and managed to interpret it as people trafficking.
Is that for real? Because I thought that was a complete wind-up.
No, I believe that was for real. Yeah.
But what they then get are more people clicking on the Breitbart website and more people reading the story, and so they're exposing their vicious rhetoric to a brand new public. So well done them.
Hats off to you, Kelly. One other story I wanted to mention, Mark Travers, who tweeted for Weymouth FC, buzzing to make my senior debut for Weymouth, the Terrors. Great to get the 3 points and grab the winner. I just explain, he grabbed the winner, that was his debut for Weymouth against Bishop Stortford, with a free kick from inside his own half, Philippe. And you want to know what's extra special about it?
Tell me.
He's a goalkeeper.
Oh.
So we'll have a bit of that extra nice music that everyone's loving so much and do the big games. Big games like Spurs-Chelsea. Spurs-Chelsea, step up to the plate, Philippe Auclair. You were there at Wembley.
Yeah, I was there at Wembley to hear the drums.
Yeah. Chelsea are back. What was the difference?
If you listen to Hugo Lloris, whom I talked to after the game, it was mostly a question of really bad luck, not being able to finish, creating loads of chances, wondering what on earth did happen. And what happened, of course, is that he let a very soft second goal. But it was a weird one. In a way, it was a kind of remake of the semi-final in the FA Cup with another brilliant goal by Marcos Alonso. And I have to say, hats off to Antonio Conte. When we got, and I think when we all saw the team that he was taking out, we all thought, how is it going to work, this thing? How is he going to put them on the pitch? And then we saw Kante playing in an advanced position. We saw Willian and Morata playing on the same line. We saw David Luiz as a midfield player. Mm-hmm. And it worked beautifully. And they'd done their homework in a very Kante-ish fashion. Now, I can reveal that. And this is not my information. It's by my friend Christophe Terrer, who had talked to a few of the Belgian guys at Chelsea. They only tried this particular setup the day before the game. So it was Conte had a eureka moment, having tried different systems, and he thought, it's not going to work, not with Bakayoko, with the kind of fitness he has got at the moment. Let's try this, which is pretty damn brilliant, you have to say.
It is brilliant, but isn't it fair to say that he could have tried the new formation on the back of a crisp packet on the way to the stadium, and it still worked because they were at Wembley, and Spurs don't win at Wembley. Is it time for the Barry Fry approach, Ian McIntosh?
Urinating on every corner flag.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's always time for that. You just give it a go anyway. It's fun. Liberating, I found. I don't think it's about Wembley. I think it's just about the fact that two good football teams played and one of them lost. Sometimes that's all there is to it. I don't think Tottenham played particularly badly at all. No. Once Chelsea had the lead, they dropped quite noticeably deep. Five defenders in a flat line, three midfielders protecting them at times. And Tottenham didn't have an awful lot of luck. I'm not sure there's much more Harry Kane could have done, really.
It's almost like there's a hoodoo against him at that stadium. eight shots, the most he's ever had without scoring. Do you know who their all-time top scorer in games at Wembley is?
In games at Wembley?
Spurs.
Is it pre-war? I don't know.
No, it's own goals.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Him again.
Yeah. He scored a few, eh?
Yeah. The one player who was a bit off, because I don't think he was entirely fit, was poor old Victor Wanyama. And it's not just because of the way the winning goal came about. He did look like he was playing in clogs for most of the game. His touch was really, really off.
But isn't that because Chelsea targeted him?
Well, yeah, quite possibly, though. Getting close to him.
But, and also, as David Priest said on here in the midweek show that I was listening to on the way here, he pointed that out. He said one of the question marks over Lloris is his distribution. Threw the ball out to Wanyama, who Chelsea were targeting in the game, and it led to Chelsea's winner.
That's remarkable.
I know that something on here comes true. Imagine.
But he also said he'd take informed people on
and they know what they're talking about.
But there were also some remarkable individual performances in Chelsea's team. I mean, Willian was simply superb. And N'Golo Kante, I don't know. I'm lost for words the way that he fitted in that new role for a while before he actually dropped a bit deeper. And I think...
So where exactly was he playing?
I would say at the beginning it was a kind of 3-4-1-2. So you had Willian and Morata playing together, same line, like two strikers, almost. And Kante had almost like a free role behind them and was positioning himself mostly on the left, but very, very close to Willian and Morata. It changed as the game went on and Spurs suddenly, you know, got all the possession and so forth. He had to retreat a bit more. But at the beginning, he was playing in a really incredibly advanced position for him. Very, very unusual. Very, very unusual. And what is also unusual is Bakayoko, who had an average game.
Right.
I mean, we all thought, all the French contingent who was there, we thought, there's no way that can work. There's no way that's going to work. And it bloody did.
Yeah. Is the thinking for Kante being that far forward is that it just puts that much more pressure that much earlier on Spurs?
Yes. And also, I think it's got to do with, of course, the fact that he can win the ball in an area which is very dangerous and which also will surprise Spurs. And it's true that the first 15, 20 minutes, they were wondering, what on earth is going on here? What's he doing here, little lad? The quality of his passing is much superior to what people perhaps think of him. And it worked. So you had high energy and you needed to have that because it's a team which had, four beginners in its ranks put together. So that's quite remarkable.
It is remarkable.
It is remarkable.
The name that Danny Rose has been Googling this week is Davinson Sanchez. Has anyone else been Googling Davinson Sanchez this week?
Yes, and looking at a few clips as well.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he was player of the year, wasn't he, for... As you no doubt discovered as well.
And I talked to...
Thank you, Wiki.
I talked to one of the guys in the tunnel who does Premier League for South America, and he's Colombian, Luis. Yeah. And Luis said, he comes from my club in Medellin, and I've been following him since he was about that big. And he said, he's fantastic. He's very, very quick. His quality of passing is awesome, especially long passing, which for Pochettino is going to be a great asset, because maybe they're missing that a little bit. Somebody who can... inject a little bit of pace and urgency in the passing from the back. So anyway, and I said, Lewis, 42 million quid, that's an awful lot of money. He said, he's worth them.
Right. And it's funny because if Scooby-Doo taught us one thing, it's to stay away from meddling kids. But
hey.
But let's hope this works. He's their third. We could have an all Ajax back three with Vertonghen and Alderweireld, except that is there not some suggestion that Alderweireld's the latest player to be a little bit upset about the size of his packet?
The plan is normally to have the three playing at the back with Vincent Sanchez playing in the middle of the three. Vertonghen on the left end, Alderweireld on the right.
Mm. So, Vincent Sanchez, that's some good news for Spurs. Here's some more. Arsenal.
Don't look at me when you say that. It's really mean.
Ian McIntosh, Hesse.
Ooh.
Have they bought a game changer at the post?
Yeah, completely. I think that the one thing that really stood out in Stoke's defeat to Everton was that they just didn't have a player who looked capable of changing anything. They really desperately needed some quality. And now they appear to have it. He was It barely really played in France, and now he's come in. It's not just the fact that he's a really, really good footballer. It's just the fact that he was driving up and down the pitch, doing his defensive work as well. He'll impress the Stoke fans with that kind of work effort. You know, I think he ran better part of 60, 70 yards for that goal from start to finish. He looks very good indeed.
Obviously, he was a name from back in the day at Real Madrid. Things didn't go well for him at PSG. Didn't get a look in at all. Then was off at, was it Las Palmas after that? Where there were concerns about not only the leg injury that had severely disrupted his progress, but also his reggaeton act. He's a DJ, acts as a JM. I don't know if you've heard any of his music, but it sounds like this.
Well, maybe we should try and think of a team of DJs.
Hmm? DJ Campbell.
very good. Well, certainly Djibril Cissé.
he's literally
Nicolas Anelka. Seems to be a French
Pogba and Lukaku together.
Peter Crouch.
Yes, he has his own show, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, over the summer.
We're a bit light in defence so far. So maybe it's not DJing is not a defensive thing at all.
Right.
Mm.
Anyway, so Stoke. They beat Arsenal, an Arsenal team that had the highest possession pretty much ever recorded, I think. 77 points.
It's still less than Liverpool's 81% against Burnley last year.
All right. OK, but that's impressive. But so was this. But Arsenal also, as Arsene Wenger pointed out, had a penalty shout and a disallowed goal, and they made Jack Butland pretty much the man of the match with all the shots they reined in on him. So how worried should Arsenal fans be? Here's Arsenal View, in fact, asking us to ask you, Philippe, where you truly believe Arsenal will finish this season.
I still, I started by having them as a top three material.
Mm.
And I'll stick to my guns.
Okay.
I'll stick to my gunners, rather. Huh. No, but it's true that I think there is such... I mean, with Arsenal, everything is about excessive reactions, be it to victory or defeat. And that was the case. I mean, they dominated. They were not very good. They were, I think, very slow, lacking purpose in possession. Still, they bossed the game, which, of course, because we're talking about Arsenal, it's got to be either fantastic or absolutely awful. Mm, it wasn't either.
They lost.
Mediocre. It was mediocre, but they had... But I still think this Stoke team is not good at all. And
well, that's worrying for Arsenal.
That's worrying for Arsenal. But it's. I genuinely think it was more of a freak result than anything else. I mean, that goal was... I'm sorry, you know, it's not a question of finding excuses, but yes, that was a pen on Bellerin. Okay, it's not given, fine.
Yeah.
But the goal was a goal. And the height was disallowed. I still don't understand. And sometimes you've just got to take a little bit of distance from it and say, yes, it was a bad result. It was not a good performance against a not very good team.
Mm.
But it's
still
not
think
a catastrophe either. Still,
not yet anyway. Ian?
I'm just really upset about Danny Welbeck. I love Danny Welbeck. Everything apart from putting the ball in the net, he's really... really good at, and it's not happening for him. At one point on Saturday, he had a pretty much clear header, and he managed to shoulder it in on goal, which is not a great sign. I don't consider myself a huge expert, but I don't think that bodes well. Granit Xhaka as well was all over the place. I'm still not getting the idea of Nacho Monreal as the main centre back. Yeah, Philippe's right. They dominated possession. They made lots of chances. They really should have got something out of the game, but this does keep happening now.
I can't talk about Arsenal anymore. I can't keep having this same conversation. I can't. You know, every year for the last, 3 years, it's been, if not longer.
Kelly, you're right.
It's been this conversation. Yep.
We'll move on. Let's
thanks,
give a little
James.
Bit of love. No.
Is this a request show?
pretty much. Pretty much. I request that you talk about Man United now, who do appear to be for real. Yeah. Jose Mourinho, who was the Tinker Man, has now settled on a side by all appearances. Here's a stat. They've already, last season's Premier League goals scored tally, they've already scored 15% of that in two games.
Yeah. That's a fantastic stat. Well done, James. Google is your
friend. I didn't do it.
Again.
They did it.
I think, it's 2-4-0 wins. I think if, you know, you have to get excited about it if you're a Manchester United fan because it is 2-4-0 wins.
Hmm.
You also... have to be careful about projecting that onto the rest of the season because of who they've got those two 4-0 wins against and because of the fact that there were late goals in both of those games, which kind of skews it a little bit. But it just shows you that it's there, and it also will give them the confidence that, you know, with all those 1-1 draws that they had last season, if you then concede, you're terrified because you think, we've only got one goal in this side. We know that this is just... But now they know that they've got the potential to score late, to score lots of goals in games, then it just takes the pressure off them a little bit. And as much as Mourinho's talking about them playing with freedom within his system, but playing with freedom, then at least it means that they have the freedom to let go of that panic as well.
Absolutely.
And that stress.
There's so much control in them. They always look like they've got so much still in reserve that they can exert if they choose to.
It looks like it's going to get better, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. The players will get more confident. They'll be more used to the system. I still think in comparison, Man City have more players better suited to change games. I just don't think Man United are going to have to change many. I think they're just going to take control, take the lead and not let up.
Well, there's a long way to go.
I'm not shouting them for the title right now.
I'm always wary because of Man City last season, with the way they started and the way that it seemed almost impossible that they might put a foot wrong, and then they very much did. But
I think this is quite different in as much you're talking about a Man City team which is absolutely bursting with talent but which is still very much unbalanced. And an unproven quantity as when it comes to defensive work and so forth. It might be that they're so good going forward that they won't need to worry so much about that. But I think United, the other thing, people are just saying, oh, no, but they were small teams and, you know, for an hour until the first goal. In fact, when they play bigger teams, I think they're going to be better, Manchester United. They will have more freedom. They won't be playing against 10 players behind the ball, as was the case against West Ham. And again, against Swansea. And I go back to the Super Cup.
Of course, when they play better sides, if anyone's got 10 men behind the ball, it's usually United themselves.
Absolutely.
Do you think that's changed this year?
I think it will change because of the kind of personnel that he has.
What do you think about the point that everybody's been making this week about the lack of width from Manchester United? Do you think that will be an issue as the season goes on?
I think, you know, when you've got Valencia as a wing-back, I mean, you've got width. And bloody good crosser of the ball as well. Blind as well as is a superb crosser of the ball.
Rooney had width. Is that the kind of thing we're talking about?
Body shaming now, aren't we?
They will use it better, perhaps. And I come back because I was after the Super Cup, and I know it was only a friendly, so to speak. Well, so to speak, between Zidane and Mourinho, it's not exactly a friendly. But everybody's raving about Real and how they're absolutely spanking everybody, including Barca. And I remember that game against Real Madrid, and I thought, they really, really caused them huge problems in the second half of that game, I think. And it's a team which is being built and which probably will have more players coming in. The one thing perhaps they don't have is somebody who can take Lukaku's place at the moment. That's the only thing I would say.
Well, Ibra's coming back.
Yes.
Not quite got the pace.
And
although he does have the kickboxing skills I was watching on Instagram.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm. Guess the injured knee, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Which knee? Look at them. I'm brilliant with both.
But, I'm repeating cliches, but it's the second season. He always uses the first season as a kind of laboratory. And then the second season, you see what it's worth. And the third season, people have had enough. Usually that's the way it works. And they look really, really impressive. And I had them as my favourites before the season started. And
you're certainly not changing your mind now.
I've not changed my mind either on this one.
Swansea, life after Siggy, it's looking difficult.
Yeah.
One shot on target in 180 minutes.
Yeah.
Is this the bit where you go, they'll be all right?
Well, yeah, I think they will be all right.
Do you think so?
I do. And they've now got plenty of money to spend before the window shuts. I think they'll be very disappointed. Tammy Abraham had that very clear header when it was still 1-0. And if they're not going to get many chances, they've really got to take ones like that. Paul Clements, a very, very good manager who have them well organised. I think they'll be fine. I think there's going to be worse teams than them.
Right, but then again, you thought that Newcastle were going to be the surprise of this season in the Premier
God.
League.
Yeah, that's
anyway,
not bad.
Anyway, we'll be back with more after this. Ian, you went to Huddersfield, John Smith Stadium.
Yes.
Battle of promoted sides, as Huddersfield took on Newcastle. Tell us more.
It was first of all, it was great to be there. I was lucky enough to be at Bournemouth a couple of years ago for their first Premier League game. And you always feel a bit of a fraud, particularly as a lower league fan, if you're people have waited decades for that moment and you just turn up, go in for free, get a meal and sit in a nice seat and watch it. But it was weird because they've got a chairman who seems to be an all-round kind of good egg. They've got a manager who's inspirational. They've got players who work really, really hard. They've got fans who are having the best time they've ever had watching the team. It's sickening, frankly. the tickets are really well priced as well. I just don't think Huddersfield get the Premier League. I don't think they're right for it.
Jake Boozer wants to know, is Morey the greatest Aussie ever in the Premier League?
Yeah, I think he's got a chance of being. I'm more impressed with him every time I see him because he's got the touch of a number 10, but he's a sort of bulldog number 8 as well. Hmm. Plays a little deeper, does his defensive work as much as his attacking work. I haven't seen him play badly yet. He does look fantastic. Schindler at the back was really good as well.
Okay.
And Thomas Ince playing down the middle, which is the first time I've seen him play there.
Last time I saw Thomas Ince play, you know, live, it was with his mother's Ladro, and he was 3.
Oh,
yeah, because
he was
son, and you know when Paul was at Inter, there was this little boy running around.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
Anyway,
best Australian in the Premier League: Mark Viduka, Harry Kewell, Cahill,
Craig Johnston. Craig Johnston's probably going to have a shout.
Not Premier League, was he?
Well, you know.
What about Mark Schwarzer?
Oh,
what about Schwarzer?
Always been one of my favourites.
Really? Yes. Well, you'll be delighted to know, and he's going to be joining us on Thursday because Thursday is very much goalkeeper day on the totally football show. John Smith's. There's something about Rafa and Bitter in there, is there?
Yeah, the relationship between him and Mike Ashley appears to have broken down completely. He was very good at putting a brave face on it. He put the defeat down to, you know, you make mistakes, you're going to get found out, that kind of thing. It was all no panic. We've just got to work harder. We've got to be better. But behind the scenes, by all accounts, he is not very happy at all. I don't know the precise nature of promises that were made at the end of last season, but it doesn't appear that they've been followed through. I mean, they have spent some money. And if we're looking for...
$5 million on Joselu?
Yeah, Joselu came on for Dwight Gale, who's very poor again, and he looked really bright.
What else?
He looked a lot better.
There's been linked with Andy Carroll.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that right?
They've been linked with an Andy Carroll return, but I'm not sure that necessarily that would work in that situation. I mean, I can see it could give the crowd a lift, and it would be Andy Carroll comes back, and it's all great. But I can't see how it would work.
No.
Particularly.
In Newcastle's defence, they were for the most part quite sensible against Huddersfield. They didn't do
a great game.
No, it's a terrible game. More combative than anything. They didn't do what Palace did and charge over the halfway line and leave gaps for the counter attack. They gave them respect, the respect that they deserved, but they just weren't quite.
Still another win at Huddersfield.
Who did they bring in? I mean, apart from Joselu, they brought in Christian Atsu from Chelsea.
Okay.
Florian Lejeune from Eibar. Jacob Murphy from Norwich, whom they paid quite a lot of money for, actually. And Javier Manquillo. I wouldn't be overexcited if I were a Newcastle fan.
Well, that's what Rafa said before the game. The money isn't the problem. Mm. Spending money isn't the problem. Availability of money isn't the problem. I can do what I need to do with this amount of money and with this budget. The problem is getting the right deals and the right players. And that's what he was complaining. You won't have seen him because it was in the pre-match coverage, but that's what he was complaining about. The fact that it's not the right players and it's not, and the deals that he wants aren't going through.
And time is running out. For us as well, actually. So I'm just going to move on past that not terribly great game onto the goaltastic Southampton 3, West Ham 2.
I was meant to say Huddersfield, who are second in the league table at the moment as we speak. Let's not get too carried away by that. Let's remember who was also in second place or third place at the end of
two rounds of
the Premier League last season. Yeah. It was Mike Phelan's Hull City.
Well, nobody's getting carried away at this point, Philippe. They're just, we're just
enjoying
saying,
the ride.
Enjoying the ride.
Football
they're absolutely
fun,
No. They're absolutely right to enjoy the ride.
Anyway.
Do you know what? There's not enough fun in football. There's too much moaning and being
negative.
There's not
negative, enough goals at St Mary's, but there was this weekend.
Sorry, I'll move on, James.
You
sense me ramping up to a rant. Look, I'm just carrying on anyway.
No, but have some fun with this. Why don't you? Manolo Gabbiadini continuing the kind kind of recent tradition of Italian strikers scoring against Joe Hart. We saw plenty of that last season. And we finally saw some goals at St Mary's. And Bilic, a lot of people have Rafa as the likeliest manager to be first to go. Bilic as well. They've conceded 92 in their last 50 games, West Ham. They're all over the place. Snodgrass has been told he can go on loan to Sunderland. He made 15 appearances since that move from a glorious Hull side. No goals whatsoever. Do you want another stat, actually?
Go on.
Javier Hernandez, Chicharito by night, has now scored 38 goals in the Premier League. All of them have come from inside the penalty area.
That's amazing for a striker.
I think so. What?
Hats off to Mark Noble as well.
For staying on the pitch.
For wandering up to Charlie Austin before the pivotal injury time penalty kick and trying to put off Austin by saying he knows you're going to put it to his right, to which Charlie Austin went, oh, right, OK, and put it to his left and scored.
That's not how it was supposed to work.
No, not entirely. But nice try.
All right. Well, a difficult start then.
We talk about recruitment. If you can understand any of, apart from Chicharito, but if you can understand West Ham's recruitment, it's absolutely extraordinary. It almost looks like they want the team to join the Legends Tour or something. It's a bit hard on
them. Should turn up at the game in black taxis and get out and parade them in front of the fans.
Kelly, you're still saying October 21st for Antonio Conte or not?
Stick to your guns.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Football's a crazy thing. You're up, you're down.
I'll be honest, I didn't say it entirely seriously last time, so I don't want to be, quoted. I know what you journalists are like, James.
Should we talk about Liverpool a little bit?
Okay.
Yeah. 1-0 win over Palace. Was it the kind of performance that you find comfort from or concern?
It's just a straightforward 1-0. Not particularly exciting win in between two European ties.
Yeah, it's a big week, isn't it?
Yeah, so fine. It's a win.
And the win at Hoffenheim you presumably enjoyed, the 2-1
there. The 2-1, yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
It was. You've talked about this already, haven't you? You've already done the kind of midweek thing. But yeah, Trent Alexander-Arnold looked excited.
Is it Andrew Robertson?
Andrew Robertson, again. Mm. Going forward, very exciting.
Milivojevic, who barely puts a foot wrong ever for Palace, that one lapse in control or concentration or whatever it was, and Palace are punished. Poor man.
Palace in general, I know we're only two games in, but it's not entirely the kind of total football that they were expecting. The last 10 minutes was Scott Dan ploughing a lonely furrow up front.
Well, it was the same thing against Huddersfield after about an hour mark, with Frank de Boer realising that the kind of football he may have intended to bring to Crystal Palace wasn't working, frantically urging them to go long.
Right.
So he's nothing if not pragmatic.
Okay.
That worked so well at Inter, didn't it?
Yeah. we're going to have a proper chat about Palace, and soon. Do we have to have a proper chat about Burnley West Brom?
Apart from stats about Robson Kanu.
Go on then.
Gwen.
Well, because he came on 63rd minute or something like that, scored 71st, was sent off 82nd minute.
Yeah, that's about right.
And which is pretty damn good. But it didn't beat, I think it's Ivan Klasnic, who still has the record for the quickest sending off after being put on the field and scoring.
Mm.
Bolton v Burnley, I think. So
how long was that then?
He came on in the 77th minute, managed to score and be sent off, and for two yellows. So that takes some willing, Pretty good.
Okay. Luke Jerome says, any insight under life under a Pulis Megson regime? They're currently on course, West Brom, to win the Premier League with 114 points and a plus 38 goal difference. It's impressive. I wasn't aware that Gary Megson had joined Tony Pulis.
Yes.
Was I aware of that?
Yes. Now there's an axis of evil.
That's interesting. How does that work?
I would imagine there's a lot of repetition. Mm. A lot of repetition. I went to see Tony Pulis, who is lovely, by the way. Mm. He's really, really nice. I went to see him about a year ago and asked him pretty much the same thing. How do you do this unit? How do you get to a point? I think they just played Martinez's Everton and soaked up 32 chances without conceding. And it is just repetition again and again and again on that shape, on the training ground, and then with set pieces as well. And they seem in a hurry to amass 40 points. So that they can clock off early.
Yeah. The first on the beach, except as one poster pointed out, that's Brighton this season.
Hey.
Ooh. Yeah. Max McLean with that one. Very nice, very nice. Speaking of Brighton, they got beaten by Leicester 2-0. Great performances from Harry Maguire, who must also rank as one of the signings of the summer, and Riyad Mahrez. But Vardy's injured. Is that long-term, Kelly? What's the latest on that?
Give me 2 seconds and I'll tell you, though.
It's troubling news because Kelechi Iheanacho's got a toe problem as well. So you've got two really good, quick centre-forwards and they're both injured.
Right.
Played down. He expected to be fine. Played down.
He?
Yes.
David Priest, who we were enjoying his goalkeeping thoughts last Thursday, was also excited by Matt Ryan, who obviously didn't have the greatest of games here. Brighton, anyway, one goal in their last five league games. Yeah, that was versus Aston Villa last May. That's a bit concerning, isn't it?
Yeah, there's been a lot of just you wait from Norwich fans about Chris Hughton in the Premier League. So just you wait until he gets up there and it goes 4-5. Very long gap. One. It's still early. He's still got time.
Beach-wise, you've got Bournemouth as well, and they're not doing desperately well, are they? What's happened to the wonderful Eddie Howe's Bournemouth?
Eddie Howe doesn't know. He actually said after the game, quite honestly, I don't know what's gone wrong here. I mean, it should be pointed out that Watford have had a very, very good start to the season. I don't know which idiot predicted them for relegation, but they look far more solid and far more organised. Marco Silva making another very good start to a new job. And Bournemouth, it gets no easier as well, because I'm down there on Saturday. They've got Manchester City.
If you talk to Bournemouth fans, they will say that there is a little bit of a problem with Eddie Howe at the moment, in as much he's trying to fashion his team in a way that will accommodate Jermaine Defoe, and he's not using King as he was using it previous season, and that it's really showing. And that's what fans who have been, Bournemouth fans for a lifetime and have been following this incredible story with Eddie Howe, and they're starting to think, come on, you've got to do something about it. And if he says that he doesn't quite realise what is wrong with the team, because, the problem last year, I think we'd agree that their dealings in the transfer market before the season started hadn't been great. They hadn't necessarily made the great best choices. Mm. This time, they've got Defoe, they've got Begovic, they've got Ake. So you think there are really excellent additions to the squad, but the source hasn't quite gelled in the proper way.
Jermaine Defoe, I assume, would go in and start scoring goals, because if he did it at Sunderland,
he will do it.
Anyway, only three touches in this game, which suggests that he had half an hour on the pitch. That's a touch every 10 minutes. On the subject of this game, William Hughes asking, if divers get a four-match ban for unsportsmanlike conduct, should Harry Arter get a similar punishment for his leave it?
No, it's totally within the laws of the game. He's not broken any...
It's ungentlemanly conduct, isn't it?
Oh, nonsense.
I'm fairly sure it is. I'm fairly sure. In fact, it was You Are the Ref with Paul Trevelyan and The Guardian a while back.
Well, it might well be by the letter of the law, but I'm disregarding that, like the Maverick.
This is why we book you. You're a renegade.
Don't you come at me with facts, McIntosh. If genuinely, that would be ridiculous if he were penalised for that. He shouted to say... So, Deeney was through, wasn't it? Shalaba was through. Shalaba was through, and he shouted, Harry Arter shouted, leave it.
And he did.
To give Shalaba the impression that it was one of his teammates.
Yeah, yeah.
And why not?
I'm pretty sure that I remember Roberto Baggio doing the same thing, so that he could get a header. He wasn't necessarily the biggest player, Baggio, but he shouted, Lascialo, and then went up. And,
it's one of the oldest tricks in the book. I don't know why people are getting so excited about that. It's really funny, actually.
I think it's fun. I mean, you wouldn't think it was funny if you cared about the outcome. That's a different thing. I understand why, if you're partisan, you would get furious about it. But other than that, I think it's great.
There's not enough fun in football.
Exactly.
The look of shock and horror on Shalaba's face is that the awful truth dawned. And then almost like a Benny Hill sketch, he did actually chase Harry Arter around the pitch.
Could you? What about if you blow a whistle to?
That's
crossing the line. Isn't it?
Yeah, that's taking the referees.
Also, you shouldn't really have one on the pitch.
But
not
Ian,
even allowed jewellery.
Ian, right. You're saying it is technically against the letter of the law.
Yeah,
but are you broadly against it?
Well, it was very funny. I mean, I'll give it that. I'm largely in favour of that. But I mean, it is technically against. I don't make the laws, Kelly.
No.
I'm just here to
enforce
them.
You're just enforcing.
Tweet us at The Totally Show and find us on Facebook and at thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Hey, here's some questions from our lovely listeners. Tom Hingley, will the pod be staying up for the Carabao Cup third round draw at 4:15 a.m. on Thursday morning? This is the most extraordinary story of the week, surely. This is the League Cup, now known as the Carabao Cup, and the third round draw, when the Premier League 7 join everybody else.
Yeah.
They're doing the draw in China.
That's what I was going to say, because Carabao is Thai, isn't it?
Yeah. But instead of doing it at a time in China, which might in some way be palatable in the UK, they've gone for, I'm not sure, whatever
if
time.
If only there were an energy drink you could take to stay up that late to watch it live here.
Bingo. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
All right. Wow.
Maybe it's a publicity thing. They're getting a lot of publicity at the moment.
It's like Breitbart, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
They should get Lucas Podolski to do the draw.
It would be Lucas Aid from...
I nearly said that, and I refrained. I thought, no, we
can't... Thank goodness, because I need those.
You need... Yeah.
Right. Neil Sermon is commiserating with poor old Nikolai Müller of Hamburg, who's going to be out for 7 months after he ruptured a knee ligament. He was doing kind of helicopter twirls and jumped up there. The worst goal celebration ever, ? Well, I always think back to Martin Palermo, who tried to do some sort of an advertising hoarding and did the same, and effectively had the same cruciate ligament injury.
If anyone is squeamish, they might want to turn the volume down for the next 3 seconds, but I'm fairly sure there was a player who jumped up onto the fencing.
Oh, yeah, it's true. He left his finger behind.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
There was finger, there was a fence, there was what I'd imagine to be a very loud sucking noise, and then a plop, and finger. Yeah, I'm done.
Oof, thank goodness.
Nick Tolhurst wants Philippe Auclair, and there's no way this is going to end badly, to talk about Brexit football implications for
English
football.
I will then report you to an excellent podcast.
Refer us to it. So the last Romaniacs podcast.
Yes. And unfortunately, they cut off about 20 minutes of my rant because it was slanderous.
Okay.
But the rest is not.
Did they leave in the first 4 hours?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Good. All right. Somebody here wants to talk about Football League.
Football League?
Yeah.
All right, I'll be as quick as I can.
No, you take your time. Because after you, it's Ligue 1.
Oh, right. Mm. Well, I'm going to enjoy the moment.
Take all of your time, then.
We'll start in League 2, where Swindon are recovering post-Sherwood. Win away at Morecambe puts them top. It was a first win of the season for biodegradable Forest Green Rovers.
Yeah.
4-3 over 4-3, Yeovil.
4-3, but you know, over Yeovil. Now, this is the thing. Yeovil, somebody was tweeting in about it, lost their name. 22 goals have been scored in their 3 matches this season. That's over 7 a game.
Getting value there. They were 3-1 down, Forest Green Rovers, in that. But still no points for Crawley under that other Australian Premier League hero, Harry Kewell. Mm-hmm. They are very much bottom. In League 1, 4 teams with 100% records still. Wigan, Peterborough, Fleetwood and Shrewsbury. 100%
you have
records.
To say Shrewsbury.
Shrewsbury.
People get really upset. Like, really, right.
I've
really
been getting that
upset.
Wrong for years.
Yeah, it's Shrewsbury. They had a vote in the local paper.
Yeah.
And they decided that they were going to go for Shrewsbury.
Because
there was some debate amongst the locals, and they said, nope, it's Shrewsbury.
So it's not as bad as getting to the edge of 29 still saying hyperbole instead of hyperbole.
You didn't.
Oh, yeah. I've got worse than that.
It's not looking good for your league around, I have to say. Anyway, go on.
It's a 100% record for Oldham and Northampton too, though in a very, very different way. And plucky Plymouth rescued a point against Southend. In the Championship, did you know Mick McCarthy used to clean Neil Warnock's boots at Barnsley?
I didn't know that.
I did not know that. Thank you, Football League paper, for that. They're together again, both implausible early leaders with 4 wins from 4.
Yeah.
There was a massive win for Burton.
That's pretty historic. Cardiff, that 4 from 4, that's the first time they've won their first 4 games since they joined the Football League in 1920. As for Ipswich, they've not won 4 out of 4 since the 74-75 season under Sir Bobby Robb.
It seems like someone else has done all the research for
But that Burton-Birmingham game was a great... The second half...
What happened
was
there?
Birmingham were leading, Burton came back to win 2-1. But it was more the way that Birmingham just sort of disappeared again, didn't they? In the second half, he was furious.
Harry was upset.
Harry Redknapp was absolutely furious.
Yeah, incandescent. He said, nobody can say, all right, lads, I'll sprinkle stardust on you. You're a lot of new boys this year. Forget that you ruined Zola last year. This year we're going to be different.
Wait, that's what he said.
Yeah, that's what he said.
But he also said in his post-match interview that he wanted to bring in more players. He said, I don't care what anybody says. You can't just come in and improve a bunch of players significantly without bringing enough new players in. But it's really hard to say that when you're playing at Burton.
Yeah.
Where Nigel Clough has done exactly that on a really tight budget and just got more out of the players than, you know, the traditional sum of their parts.
Very good point. But you think anyway that Harry's winding his window down.
Well, yeah, he's definitely angling for for more players. Definitely.
There's some late transfers there. And just finally, a win for Aston Villa. 4-2 over Norwich. First of the season, Connor Hourihan hat-trick and a stellar full debut from former Biggleswade man Keenan Davis.
Biggleswade.
Mm-hmm.
In the National League, I want to tell you about Rory Keating, who's the nephew of the former Boyzone lead singer and all-round blight on the musical landscape, Ronan Keating. Rory Keating plays for Torquay, and I think it's fair to say that his game was a roller coaster. Last week.
Your best friend is the nothing at all.
And how ironic was it that
best
Ronan
theme
should,
tune.
Yeah. Anyway,
me and Michael Cox were in a taxi in Dublin with a taxi driver who spent the 25-minute journey to the airport hammering Ronan Keating mercilessly.
Why? On what
using
basis?
All of the swear words.
But why? Had he not?
Was
just
the back
everything.
Of his cap at that point?
No, he wasn't.
It wasn't
was not
a personal
happy
experience,
with
so he just didn't like his music.
He just didn't like it. Just the entire journey he hated Ronan Keating.
You see, extraordinary
person. I think there's a case to be made for, you know, if you're a young up and coming, aspiring, whatever, and you get picked to be in a boy band or whatever, like Boyzone. Yeah.
But who are very much a boy band.
A boy band. But to then inflict further misery, you know, continue that vicious cycle by starting one of your own. Westlife.
Well,
Westlife. But anyway, that's not what I was
They bring
going
a lot of pleasure to a lot of people.
Well, I suppose they do.
My grandma
and
Carol
right.
at a Westlife concert. They had a lovely time.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. Anyway, let's talk about Rory Keating. He scored to give Torquay a 2-1 lead at Guiseley. This is in the National League, where I'm all up in that. However, he was later credited with... It is good. He was credited with scoring a 95th-minute own goal, which resulted in the Gulls losing 3-2, leaving the bottom of the National League. But he then tweeted that he'd already been subbed and wasn't even on the pitch when the goal was scored. Nobody has yet claimed the goal.
Ooh, the mystery of the unclaimed goal. That's brilliant. That's another... We should send that to Steve Bruce for one
We should resurrect
books.
Enid Blyton.
Yes.
Okay.
We have the technology.
Did you want to talk about poor old Leonid Slutsky at Hull?
Yeah, beaten by QPR and, he sounded very upset at the end.
It's a shame, isn't it? Because the other day we were talking about how happy he looked in his first game. That
He's clearly a very emotional man. And it was a late winner as well from QPR, wasn't it?
And they had a late one against Wolves the other night as well.
There's no time to talk about Spain, although Barcelona did kick off with them. We'll talk about that on Thursday. We'll also deal with Italy, where there was a lot of VAR action and there was Pjanic looking like the most underrated midfielder in the world, as Sonny points out in his tweet. That passed the Dybala's goal. Juve 3-0 up with Costa, Bernardeschi and Matuidi still on the bench. They didn't look like they're going to struggle the way we thought maybe they would, but then they were playing Cagliari. Anyway, I wasn't going to talk about Italy now. We're going to do a big thing on Thursday with James Horncastle. They had a 3-0 win. Milan had a 3-0 win. Inter had a 3-0 win. As well. Let's instead finish off, dear listener,
with Bundesliga, clearly. You were talking about VAR, and there was a fantastic use of VAR in the Bayern game.
That's true. Go on, then.
Well, it was the win of FC Bayern against Bayer Leverkusen. And at one stage, Arangis got hold of Lewandowski, I believe, which escaped the referee's attention, the field referee's attention, but not the attention from the guy upstairs. And the guy upstairs, quick message, hey, I think we've got something here, which happened, which you've missed. It took, 15 seconds maximum? And they saw, yes, Arangis actually prevented Lewandowski to get to the ball. Mm. The referee pointed to the penalty spot, and Lewandowski scored. And that was as quick as is quicker than even in cricket or in rugby.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody complained or anything. That was the right way to do it. Basically, it's the guy upstairs who is the boss in this kind of situation.
Do you mean God? Or?
Yeah, that's exactly who I mean.
Ultimately, I think he does.
No, it was, you know, there have been so many instances of the process not working or being a right pain or stopping the game for too long. This was, I think, pretty an example of what can be achieved with.
Okay, there was good and bad, I think, in the Serie A examples. But
yeah,
we'll get onto that on Thursday because I really want to know. I don't think a lot of people want to know your reaction to what happened this weekend in France.
There was an awful lot which happened this weekend.
Okay, we'll pick your stories with care. I imagine that amongst them, you probably would have a PSG's 6-2 victory over Toulouse.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
Neymar, who on his unveiling, as Tim Redigola points out, said, there are no easy games here. yeah. pretty much ridiculed the opposition. No?
Yeah, but you forgot the canned laughter at the bottom when you said that. Yes,
but
there are easy games.
Is his presence in Ligue 1, does it reduce some matches to a bit of a mockery? That's the question.
I don't think it reduces the matches to mockery. It reduces the coverage of some matches and of Ligue 1 as to mockery. I'm really not thrilled by that aspect of things. And I would imagine like players like Edinson Cavani, who was also very good in that game, or Javier Pastore, who scored an absolute beauty, which I hope you saw.
Mm.
And of course, he's been terrific since he's been at the club. Honestly, absolutely terrific, entertaining the crowd. And the results are there, 9 points of nine. And you're wondering, wow, who can stop them? Well, Monaco is the answer. But on the other hand, it's quite ridiculous when you see the coverage. It is basically, it's Neymar, Neymar, Neymar from page one to page 33.
But he looks fantastic, though.
He looks fantastic, but he didn't even score the best goal of the weekend. We'll come to that in a second.
We'll come to that. He did the best rainbow flick of the weekend, though.
Yeah, okay. And but it goes to such ridiculous extremes that after Johan Denis, the French athlete, won the gold medal at the Athletics Championships, it was not Denis who was on the front page, it was Neymar, which is absolutely ridiculous. And absolutely ridiculous. And for all that he brings in terms of entertainment and so forth, and also exposure abroad in particular to Ligue 1, there is also another effect to countenance that, and which I'm not too happy with myself, and I'm not the only one. I think most football fans who are not completely in awe of PSG would say the same thing.
The effect being that it unbalances
completely
the league.
Unbalances everything. Well, the league, I don't know, we'll see, because I think, the Monaco, even though there are problems at Monaco, and you might have seen what's happening with Mbappé at the moment.
He's not even
training with the team. There was a big fight with with Raji on the training ground, and basically he's not allowed to train with the team. He's insisting that he wants to go to PSG and so on.
PSG.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. And heaven help us if Mbappé joins Neymar at PSG.
And what
I think there won't be any nanomillimeter, whatever,
right.
for the others.
What would that mean for Edson Cavani?
Exit, no?
Yeah.
I would imagine so. Well, you've got to play him.
Is it possible to explain in, let's say, 60 seconds for somebody really thick like me,
yeah,
how it's possible in a world where FFP is a thing for PSG to do that?
It's possible because if you make a player sign a five-year contract,
right,
the price of the purchase is amortized over the length of the contract,
right.
First
okay.
thing. Second thing, they've got loads of players that they can get rid of for some money. They've already got rid of Blaise Matuidi for peanuts, by the way, I think. But there are quite a few other players who could follow. Well, Jose went as well. There are quite a few players who could be dispensed with. And in that way, they could, at the moment, deal with the FFP, UFPF, as we say in French, consequences. Because it's over a three-year period. But they're going to be hit in about 2 years' time.
Mm.
But that, as you said, explain that quickly. It's impossible.
No, that's fine.
See, at the moment, they can do it.
All right.
But they'll have to pay it at some point in the near future.
Kelly, do you have a question about French football?
No, I have a comment.
Okay.
Do you want me to?
Yeah.
No, I don't have a question. I have a comment, which is on the whole subject of Neymar. And you're in a different position, Philippe, because you are involved emotionally in the league and, professionally in the league. But watching it from the outside, and as discussed earlier, you don't think football is fun. But watching it from the outside, I love the Neymar stuff that's coming out of Ligue 1. I love seeing the clips and the goal he scored last night and a few messages underneath of people saying, yeah, but the defending was terrible. I'm like,
that's bollocks.
It.
No, but that's
for God's sake, let yourself enjoy the game. It's just, I don't get it. I don't
come
get
and
that
watch me play against 6
mentality.
Year olds, you'd love it.
Yeah, well, less so.
No. I mean, I agree with you entirely on this, and should enjoy it. And I think I said it as a caveat, but I want to be the devil's advocate. In a way, what we should be talking about when we talk about Ligue 1 is Nabil Fekir's goal, which is truly
there we go,
astonishing.
Nabil Fekir,
beautiful.
Ironically, for a man named Fekir, he is for real, and what he did this weekend was just extraordinary.
It was extraordinary. Yes.
Okay, so set it up for us.
Well, it's the beginning, I think it's 11th minute of the game against Bordeaux. Nabil Fekir, who we should remind our listeners, has come back from a very, very severe injury.
And he's the man who made Lacazette, really, isn't he?
Yeah, and you might remember that in the past we've often talked about those and I've always been a Fekirian rather than a Lacazettist. He gets the ball in an unthreatening position within his own half, just lifts his head, sees that Benoît Costil, the keeper, is a little bit perhaps too forward, and then with his weak foot unleashes not a lob, but a shot from full 50 metres, and a shot which finishes in the roof of the net. It's absolutely, the trajectory of the ball flight is just a thing of beauty.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's absolutely.
Sure, if they haven't seen it, we'll go and see. It's 54 metres, which is actually not the longest ever in Ligue 1, because la plus longue distance, celui de Saba Khalifa contre Nice. That was in May 2013. That was 64 metres.
Yeah.
That's just stupid.
Yeah, that is stupid. But the length and the distance is like the Xabi Alonso strike, which we remember. It's the quality of the shot, the trajectory. Yeah. The only thing that is missing is all-styled nets so that they would genuinely bulge. And that would have been, so they had this ripple effect as well. In the same game,
yes,
a free kick was scored, which was even better than Marcos Alonso's, by Bertrand Traoré.
Really?
Yep. Absolutely fantastic.
Okay. Well, go and watch some French highlights. BT Sport have them, although they're not on a Sunday night anymore. Anyway.
Let's not forget,
yes,
for all the hipsters, that things are not going well for Bielsa at Lille at all.
Oh, right.
Ooh, loads of grumblings there. Another loss.
Is there a place where they can read your thoughts on that, Philippe?
In France Football.
Okay, bingo.
For example.
I only say that because Ian has already taken his headphones off because he's got somewhere to go. You've got somewhere to go, haven't you, listeners? Yeah, I thought so. So we'll bring today's Totally Football Show to an end with that. Ian, any final thoughts?
No.
Philippe?
None to add.
Kelly?
Nothing.
Hope we're going to see you again soon. Many thanks to Spiritland, who've been our host today, and to you, listener, for tuning in. We're going to be back on Thursday with the very great Mark Schwarzer, the Horn Dog, and Mr. Football Clichés himself, Adam Hurry.
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, that's going to be something to look out for. For now, that's the Totally Football Show. Goodbye.